Well, as I mentioned earlier, many businesses have been closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but psychics appear to be doing very well right now because more and more people are turning to psychics during this health crisis. In a world of uncertainties, people are looking for predictability. The New York Times recently highlighted increased online traffic for horoscope and psychic consultations. Astrologers and tarot card readers have also reported an increased demand in their services. People want answers. In a moment, we're going to be talking with psychic medium Nikki Allen as we go live to the United Kingdom to talk with her. Her latest book is called Me, Myself, and I, Diary of a Psychic, and she's next. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Nikki Allen with us, United Kingdom-based, is a born psychic medium coming from many generations of psychics before her. She was officially starting her psychic work 27 years ago. For 18 years, she was also a major investigation bereavement-trained detective in Essex Police. Following medical retirement back in 2003 and by public demand, she achieved a very high profile in the spiritual industry as a full-time psychic medium, spiritual teacher, writer, and angel communicator. And we're talking all about that tonight on Coast to Coast with Nikki Allen. And Nikki, welcome to the program, way out there where you are.
Hello, my lovely man. Isn't it wonderful to be able to talk all these miles apart? It's a good morning here from the UK, but I know obviously that everybody's all tucked up listening to you in the evening.
Well, we're going to have some fun, and you have such a delightful English accent, my dear.
Well, thank you very much.
How did you get involved in psychic work, Nikki?
Oh, my goodness. To be honest with you, it started, I was very young. A lot of people would say this kind of story, that you felt different as a child. And then when I was 9 years old, I saw my dad 2 days after he died in a road accident. And he pulled up in his car, and don't ask me how he manifested that, and said to me, "I'm okay, Nikki, don't worry." I obviously then ran back home, which was very difficult for my family because they were all mourning him, and I was going absolutely mad, telling them that I'd just seen him and why they were lying to me. And so my granddad kind of pulled me aside, my dad's dad, paternal side is a lot stronger, and said, "You know, you're a special girl, Nikki. You're going to start seeing people that have passed over and you may see angels." And, it kind of started from there because my dad was solid as you like. There was no mystical, sparkly clouds anywhere. He literally was right in front of me. And it kind of started from there. But my main thing I wanted to do in life was to become a police officer. And so I also had a lot of abuse during my teenage years, and it kind of bubbled away in the background. It then came to the fore again when I was back in the police service. Unfortunately, when I was very young, 19, 20, I would use it as a party trick, and I would do readings for people, and I would tell people about a stranger across the room, and then they'd go over and find out everything I said about them was right. And it wasn't until a lady was in a bar. I was in a bar with my friends, as usual, showing off with my skills. And I said to this lady, "The murder that you saw and the person who did it, you've got to let this go now." And what happened was is that she'd seen someone throw someone down the stairs and murder them at a holiday camp when she was on holiday.
Oh, my.
She was so scared that she didn't tell the police. And she's held the guilt of that all her life. And the murder victim had come to me in the bar and told me to tell her to let it go, that karma was going to work out and that this man had already been arrested for something else. And she absolutely lost it. You know, she just got really upset, dropped her drink, and I thought, oh, my God, I've got a responsibility here. I need to stop mucking about with it. And that's when I went to a psychic fair to a local place where I lived. It turned up on the Saturday, and I thought, wow, I've got to go here. You know, the universe has led me here. I walked in, a lady pulled me aside and said, "I need to teach you things." And it was about discipline, really. You know, disciplining when you do it and when you don't, respecting the spirit world, respecting humans, because obviously you're delivering life-changing and emotional things that could affect them. And I had to learn about that. And then she just disappeared from my life. And I ended up doing readings in the evening and doing corporate parties and things like that in the evening. And then investigating murders and kidnaps during the day.
So did it take you a while? Did it take you a while, Nikki, to convince police officers that you were the real deal?
To be honest with you, I did keep very quiet to begin with in my early years because I thought that people would obviously make fun of me. It wasn't until I was on it's a criminal investigation department here, CID, you know, my first detective role,
yeah.
that one of my friends said, who I was working with, said, I heard you do readings. I'm like, oh, no. So I said, yeah, I do, actually. And it was a really weird one because when she said, can I have a reading with you? And so I kept seeing chicken eyes when I did this reading with her. And she started crying and said that they used to call her mum Chicky because she had a flick in her eye that looked like a chicken eye. And she went, oh, my God, you really know what you're doing. So she then went back and told everybody in the office, everybody wanted a reading, everybody's wives or husbands or spouses wanted a reading. And then from that time on, I was respected for it. And obviously, you know, CSI would come to me and say, look, you know, can you do anything with this? We had a baby that was kidnapped from a hospital. And it set the precedent to change the law over here for security around babies and maternity unit. And he said, look, I've got the blanket from the baby that was kidnapped. You know, what can you pick up? And I drew the area where the baby was, the view from the window, what the baby was wearing. I got the profile of the woman that had taken her and that she'd already registered at the hospital. And I said, it doesn't matter, though. I said, we won't find her. A neighbour will see this and phone in, and she'll be back with her parents at 5-6 a.m. And it happened. It happened. Everything that I said happened. And so that kind of gave me even more kudos that I knew what I was doing. But it was very difficult, you see, because you had to give evidence through a court of law, which didn't involve being a psychic. We had to come up with all sorts of things. Like, oh, we had anonymous information, Your Honour. You know, and we had to try and implement ways of trying to get to legally, you know, I got information and we had to kind of legally get it in there so it'd be recognised in the court of law. Because I even got a motive for a murder, a man, we suspected a man had killed his wife. We had no motive at all for it. It wasn't until I started getting visions about a young girl that was a family member. A friend of the family. And I thought, my goodness, I keep getting visions of her. Like, you know, loving and kissing this man. And she was only 15, and I thought, that can't be right. But when I saw her, you know, romantically involved, even though nobody told us in the police. A very long story short, I found some notes in a diary that was taken from the husband's van, and it was like a coded love letter. And so that was lit up. My guides lit that up for me, and then I basically went and saw her and said, right, you're having an affair with this man. And she broke down and she said, yep. And I said that, you know, he should never leave his wife, so he decided to kill her instead so we could be together.
Jeez.
So, you know, things like that, it was amazing for. You know, it really did help me. And lots of people said, you know, some of the sceptics would say, oh, it's detective's hunch. And I'd be like, no, it wasn't. And, you know, the worst thing was, George, is that I would be... You know, my main role was looking after murder victim families and rape victims. And I would go into a murder victim family to say that, you know, unfortunately their loved one had been murdered.
Oh, my God. And that's hard enough.
In the room.
Yeah, and we're right there.
They were right there. And sometimes they would talk to me and tell me and give me clues about, you know, what happened. Other times they just literally just sat there and wanted to be with their family. And it was so difficult.
Wow.
Because I had to be a professional, you know, police officer, and I'm looking at the murder victim, and he's saying, please tell my family I'm okay. And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm supposed to be, you know, a professional police officer. So it was a bit of a nightmare now and then. It really was, but it certainly did help me. And you know, my whole life, all I want to do is help people through their agony, through their darkness. And, you know, I got retired from the police service with a back injury, saving someone's life. I ripped all my ribs away from my spinal joint. And they said, look, this is no good. You know, you're just going to continually hurt your back. So I had to get retired, which was awful. And then my house became alive. I had spirit people calling my name. The partner I was with at the time kept saying I could hear them as well. So I knew I wasn't imagining it. And light bulbs would explode when I was near them. Light fittings would sway if I walked, you know, they used to sway above my head. And then this crying baby came into the house, a spirit baby, and everywhere I went, it cried. And it was just, oh my God, it really did do my head in.
Well, why was it crying?
They were trying to force me because I did not want to be a full-time medium. I wanted to carry on either being a private detective or something like that.
Sure.
There's no way I want to, you know, be a medium for a living. I'd lived with it all my life. You know, my granddad, my grandma, they all kind of used the tarot cards, and my aunties, everybody, all my family are healers, psychics, you know. My brother's a working medium. We've all got the ability. And it goes, as you said, it goes back generations. So I thought, I'm not going to do this for a job. And it wasn't until my friend phoned and said, oh, how they laughed, George. Oh, how they laughed, the spirit people. Because they're like, you're going, Nikki. Because I got a phone call from my friend who said, I want to go and see a medium, but I'm scared of going on my own. Can you come with me? I'm like, oh, my God. Right, okay. So I go with her, knock on the door, and the medium doesn't even look at her. She looks at me and said, that baby won't stop crying until you work full-time for the spirit world. I was gobsmacked. I could not believe what she just said. And she said, the reason they're doing it is they are basically pushing you and pushing you. Do you know the film Ghost?
Yes.
Do you know the film Ghost, when Patrick Swayze is singing 99 Bottle of Beers on a Wall?
Trying to drive Whoopi Goldberg nuts.
Yeah, and that's what they were doing. And literally, the following day, I phoned up my friend who had a beauty salon in the local town that I lived in, and I said, look, can I use one of your rooms to do readings? And literally, as soon as I put the phone down, the baby stopped crying. The baby stopped crying, and that was it. My house was back to normal. And it was, they were literally pushing and pushing and pushing me to do this. And I was still heartbroken from not being in the police service. You know, I was like, wow, what am I going to do with my life? And then my retirement letter turned up to say I'd been retired from the police, and I was devastated. You know, I knew that I was being retired, but the official black and white, you know, thing telling me that was just devastating. And on the same token, I remember standing in my back garden, and I also had a newspaper delivered, and it kept flicking and flicking in the wind. I just put my hand on it, and where I put my hand on it, there was an evening of mediumship. There was psychic night that night in my local village hall. And so I thought, well, that's got to be a sign. I'll just go in there, because I never used to go to anything like this. It was like a busman's holiday. I knew I had the gift. I did it whenever I wanted to help people. And I really didn't think, you know, to take it any further. So I went to this evening, and I saw these three spirit people standing outside the window of this hall. And there was one that was a taxi driver, one was who loved his motorbike, one was called Mark, I think one was called Tom, I can't remember who the other one was. And there was these three men, and they kept looking at me. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going mad. I've got these three people looking at me. And the woman who was doing the show ended up coming to me and saying, your dad's here, and she did say a few things I knew were him, because we have code words and code visions, and when I get shown that, I know it's definitely him communicating, you know, because there's a lot of people that just do a load of rubbish, but we'll talk about that later. And she basically said, you need to dust yourself down, because you're going to be known all around the world, you're going to be writing, you're going to be teaching, you're going to be helping people on a mass, you know, on a mass level.
Sure.
And so just hold on, because you're about to go on a roller coaster ride. And I thought, what, being a detective? I didn't really know what she meant. And I was like, well, okay, fine, thank you. And after the show, I thought, she's either going to think I'm a complete nutter or a wannabe, but I thought, I've got to tell her, because these three men were still there. And I walked up to her and said, can you see those three men through the window? She said, no. And I said, well, one's called Tom, one's called Mark. I can't remember the names now. It's in my journal. One's called Larry, and she goes, oh, my God, you've just described my late husband, my father-in-law, and my son. She said, you really need to start doing this, because, you know, you need to do it seriously and really start projecting yourself. So then I did. I started doing the reading. Within about a week or so, I had a six-month wait in this. I was asked to do my first documentary over here on the Hindley and Brady murders. I don't know if you know about those, the children that were killed in the 70s, and left on the moors here, the moors murderers. And it just literally, I did. My dad was right. I went on this roller coaster, and before I knew it, I was doing television. And it wasn't fame-oriented.
But it was a good roller coaster, right?
Sorry, my love?
It was a good roller coaster ride, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. You know, I am not, you know, a wannabe. I don't want to be on television for the sake of being on there. I wanted to reach people. So I only accepted programs and series or seasons of things that I knew would help people. And so to be on television and then get so many people email a message saying, wow, you've changed my life. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I've stayed grounded, George, you know. I'm not someone that's all fluffy and believes everything spiritual. I'm pretty much like a psychic detective, which is one of my columns in a magazine. I literally have to get evidence before I share my knowledge. You know, I don't just say to people what I believe and try and push it on them. I share what I know because it's been proved to me through synchronicity and signs, and then I leave it to the people to whether they take it on or not. And obviously, you know, with my recent journey from my accident, my absolute passion is to take people through their darkness. And as you said at the beginning, you know, that people, because of COVID, people are now coming to psychics.
Oh, my God, yeah. Do you find that, you know, to be the case, too?
Sorry, my love?
You find that to be the case as well?
Yes, definitely. The thing is, though, darling, there's a yin and yang to that. You know, because the thing is that there are lots of dodgy mediums out there. And I'm not, you know, there's bad apples in every industry. And what concerns me is that desperate people that are perhaps losing their job or finding themselves poorly, or they're, you know, they've lost members from the coronavirus, whatever it may be that's impacted their life because of this pandemic, what I worry is out of desperation, they'll go to these mediums that are there ready to have them and take their money. And that's what concerns me.
Yeah.
However, for me, I predicted all this 6 years ago. I even did a fictional book about it, Earthwalkers. I didn't realize that it was going to become fact. And basically, to me, it's like, great. I can now get as many people as I can on board through my online site and help people get through this darkness, help them get forward, you know, with anything they're worried about. And so, there's a yin and yang. The reputable, recommended psychics and mediums who are there genuinely to help people, this is the best thing that could have happened. It's a year of balance. It's a year of a plateau of trying to get everything sorted politically, commercially, you know, humanity-wise. We're obviously abusing the planet. We're waking up to a lot of things this year. This is what we've been told spiritually. And then, you know, that's brilliant for people like me and people that just want to help humanity and help the planet and help people to be a better person and to radiate light rather than fear, worry, ego and darkness. And as I say, as long as they come to the reputable people, it's good. But the problem is you're always going to get the people there that want to make a quick buck and will be, yeah, I can do a reading for you. Mm-hmm. You know, so all I'd say to the listeners is please, please, please go to reputable mediums. Go to ones that are recommended mouth by mouth. Don't pay these high premium rates. Some of them are just outrageous money. And also, likewise, you know, some of these mediums have had a bit of TV, as psychics have been on TV, they're then charging, I think there was someone I remember asking, and it was $350 for 30 minutes. And I'm like, wow, that's really not good.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
don't
a lot.
Take money from people, you know, and exploit them. Yes, we have to make a living like anybody else. And someone, you know, you do get the skeptics that say, oh, you're making money from, you know, desperate people. I said, well, number one, I don't tell anybody. I've never advertised at the beginning of my career. The only thing I advertise is my book and my CDs and the fact that I'm online to help people on YouTube.
And there's nothing wrong with that, Nikki. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk some more. Plus, I understand you're an angel communicator. Let's talk about that, too. Well, next hour, we're going to take your phone calls with Nikki Allen. And yes, she will do readings. What we'll need from you is your name, your age, and a direct question for her to answer for you. So get ready for that. But I'm going to come back and talk with her about her angel communication abilities, because that's fantastic, too. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Nikki Allen with us live in the United Kingdom. Nikki, before we get into your angel communication abilities, The title of your book, Me, Myself, and I, Diary of a Psychic, has a subtitle that says A Miracle Journey Surviving Chronic Illness. What was that illness?
Yep.
What happened to you?
Oh, my goodness. Life-altering. I had a road accident, basically. It wasn't a horrific one. Someone just smashed into the side of me as I was turning into a restaurant area. I was in a passenger seat, and they crushed me up against the center console. I had to be taken out by paramedics in the emergency room. They couldn't work out why I was in such agonizing pain. I was screaming the rooftops down, and I couldn't understand myself. And overnight, you know, they said that it was just soft tissue damage and shock. Went home. I was renting a place down here because I was looking at buying a new home here in Devon, which is a very coastal place, beautiful place. And I fell asleep and stayed asleep for 24 hours. I woke up, and when I looked at the light, it felt like I had black molten pokers in my eyes. I couldn't walk. Excuse me. I had to be carried to the toilet, to the bathroom, and I went back to the hospital, and then that started a year of tests. Because I was so exhausted, and in agonizing pain, and they basically diagnosed me after a year with chronic fatigue syndrome, and we call it ME over here, hence in the title of my book, and fibromyalgia, which is like widespread muscular pain, but it's everywhere, and so then I had an onslaught then of pain, neuro symptoms, waking up blind, couldn't hear, couldn't understand people, couldn't talk. And obviously, I just finished touring with Colin Fry. I don't know if you know him from The Sixth Sense, the late Colin Fry.
Yeah.
And I was literally just being offered to come over there, darling. Oh, my goodness. I was supposed to go and do a tour in America, then Australia. Everything was amazing. And then, bang, I was literally left in bed for 5 years. So I lost my home.
Did you say 5 years, Nikki? 5 years?
5 years. I was stripped bare, darling. I was homeless for 8 months. My partner at the time stole £65,000 from me. I lost my career, my friends, my way of life, my health. I was stripped bare to me with two dustbin bags and my two little rescue dogs. That was it.
Jeez.
And at the time, I absolutely, oh my goodness, the air was blue, darling. All the old language from the police force came back. I called them everything under the sun, the spirit world, the angel realm, because I was left with this debilitating illness year after year on my own, laying there, waiting for the next symptom to hit me. It was horrific.
How are you now?
I'm amazing. I still have the condition, but I went through a spiritual boot camp and miracles that most people would think were fiction. And unless, you know, my dogs didn't react, I had angels visiting me. I had spirit people visiting that told me what medication to go on. And, you know, the dogs reacted to the visitation, so I knew it wasn't me imagining it. And I was kicking and screaming to begin with. I'm not listening to you. I hate you. They weren't preaching to the converted. I literally lost my faith. I thought that I told red people it was all a load of nonsense. There was no heaven. I hated it. I was in such a bad space. But eventually they started doing this, what I call it in the book, spiritual boot camp, where they started to show me that nobody is alone on this planet, that they can help us. And they just literally got rid of my debt. And I sit here now, darling, and I'm not going to lie. I'm sitting here. I live straight across from the beach. This house is paid for that I've got, and I adore it. I started up my career most probably 2 years ago because I thought I'm ready now. And, you know, I do my YouTube thing, and then they pushed me to do this book, and I'm saying there's no way that anybody's going to read my book. And it went to number one at Amazon under my genre. And it's just, and it literally is the journals that I wrote when I could actually physically pick up a pen. I wrote the pain, the darkness I was going through, and the miracles that were taking place. They would not leave me alone until they knew that I was well enough and able enough to share my experiences. And the reason they did that and they've told me is it's almost like I'm a pioneer. The millions missing, the US coined the phrase of us. There is a pandemic of CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia. And I think a lot of people are undiagnosed. And basically, I am now putting it out there saying, you know, you left us alone, you leave us alone. As a society, they give us a label because they can't find anything else wrong with us, and then they just chuck a load of painkillers at us, and we have to mentally get over that. And so the book not only covers chronic illness sufferers, but it covers anybody that's experienced depression, any type of loss, and the fact you're not alone, and that if you just surrender and open up to what could possibly be your saviour, they will take you wherever you want to be. I've never been so happy. I found the love of my life, my soulmate. As I say, I've paid off my home.
Good for you.
My career is starting to go. I've never been so whole and abundant because I had a lot of demons from my past. You know, I had a lot of abuse after my dad died. My mum married a very, very, very... I'm going to call him an animal, to be honest with you. I love animals, so that's even too good for him. And I went through a very, very long time of sexual and physical abuse. And I had all these demons, you know, within me that I didn't realise I had until the angel realms and my spirit people brought them out through dream state. And it was just an incredible journey where I now don't have... I used to loathe myself because that was obviously beaten into me. You know, people that are listening now that have gone through abusive episodes will know that you condition yourself to what the abuser thinks you are. And so I did condition myself. So even though I was a strong detective, very good at my job, and then I was a spiritual ambassador and did what I did, I still didn't really practice what I preached inside. And it isn't till now they taught me cosmic ordering. So I now think, right, I need this for the greater good. Thank you very much. Look, I'm talking to one of the most fantastic hosts on a brilliant, most amazing radio show. How does that happen? It's just literally...
It is magic.
What makes it...
Which leads us into this, Nikki. How did you become an angel communicator? How did that happen?
Oh, wow. Incredible. What happened was is that, funnily enough, this ties back to the abuse. After I would have any bouts of abuse, I would hear, and it's almost like you could hear a distant radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to hear like a chorus of singers singing to me. And I remember it used to comfort me, and I used to rock and then fall to sleep. And they were always there. And I never really took much notice of it. And it wasn't until, and this is so embarrassing, this is very embarrassing. It wasn't until I did an angel seminar and I had loads of people there. There's me talking about angels. And I say, well, I'm going to take you to a meditation, take you to this layer where I know the angels reside. And I went up and these ladies said to me, these seraphim angels, who are the oldest order of the angel realms, they, you know, they create the dawning of a planet with Archangel Ariel. And they said, oh, welcome back. And I said, oh, do you know me? And they went, yes, we sang to you when you were in pain. And it hit me, and I thought, oh, my goodness. And they started this chorus. They're known for their music, their chorus, communication to us. And I came out, so, you know, supposed to be this wonderful tutor, a mess. I was crying my eyes out because I've been reunited with these angels, and they played the same tune I'd heard during my teens. And then I thought, wow, hang on a minute. I've got an ultimate connection with them. And it just starburst from there.
Wow, that's amazing.
Like it is, honestly, because, again, you know, skeptics and other people may question, oh, yeah, angel realms, right. But I literally used to have them come in. During my time when I was ill in bed for 5 years, I would have someone come in. I could feel the essence. An angel essence is like, first of all, you may smell something floral. And it is so definitive and so powerful that you have to sit up and listen. So I had an angel once when I was supposed to drive home from someone's house, and I was just about putting my shoes on, and I heard, no. And I'm like, wow. And then I bent out, no, you will not leave the house. And I found out that there was a massive car smash on the road that I would have been on at that time.
Saved your life.
Saved my life. They've done it so many times. Again, I was on a major freeway, I was on a big highway, and suddenly one of them said, brake now.
Yep.
And so I just hit the brakes, and my passenger, my friend goes, what are you doing? And a huge tractor tire bounced right in front of me, over me, went over the carriage into a field. So if I hadn't have braked, it would have killed us.
Well, let me ask you this, Nikki, because let me tell you what happened to me years ago. I've talked about it on the radio program for some time, and I've always wondered whether it was my intuition or an angel that saved me. I was driving through a four-lane intersection, and as I was coming up to the intersection, I had a green light, which means you keep going. But something just compelled me, don't go through the intersection. Don't go through the intersection. And I'm thinking to myself, I've got a green light. I can't just stop. So I pulled over. I did not go through the intersection. Somebody had, at that moment, gone through his red light on the other side and would have broadsided me and hit me as bad as you got hit in your car accident. But it saved my life. But I've always wondered, did George have this intuition, or was it an angel that saved me? How do I know?
I think it's because with intuition, you literally feel it, and sometimes you ignore it because it's such a quiet voice, and then you think, oh, wow, I should have listened
well,
to that.
Well, I did feel, but this time I listened.
Yeah, this time you listened, and you knew you had to stop then and there. That is normally angel energy, because you know you have to act then and there or nothing. You know you have to stop. And so normally that is either, you know, a guardian angel, or it is an angel that says, well, no, we need George here because he's going to be doing brilliant things for his life. You know, he's going to be doing things that are going to help people understand and learn, and this all this communication. We can't have him die. And so they would have sent an angel to say, stop, don't go there, don't go there. And it's, and you, I would say that was an angel interaction.
Wow.
Because you had to stop then and there. Because normally intuition can be a bit wishy-washy. And this is why I try and encourage people, you know, to meditate and try and connect with their inner compass, so that they're, my guide Juliana calls it the lion and the mouse. And the mouse is the divine side of us, our intuition. And let's have the mouse roar, you know, louder than the lion. And so that's how I work now. My inner compass is my whole way of being now. And this is what I want to try and help people to do. Because how many times have you said, don't do that, don't do it? You do it, and then later on you think, wow, I knew I should have done that.
If I woulda, shoulda, coulda. My situation, it was a little like Clarence in the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, absolutely. It was a definitive moment where you know that you had to stop, and that was it. And that is how I see angel energy. I was very lucky. I don't think it'll ever happen again. You know, I spoke with my dad from the spirit world for 10 minutes. I had angels 7 foot high standing in my doorway. I had seraphim around the house that I'd managed to rent that someone had lent me the money for. And I don't think it'll ever happen again. But they knew for some reason that I've got something special to share with people. So they knew they had to get me back into this space so that I could perhaps be sitting here and hopefully touch people's souls are suffering or struggling or have chronic illness or whatever it is with this book and also my words. And I've got a feeling, you know, it's not just about the book. I feel like I've always been told I'm going to end up doing a lot in America, in the States. I've been told that for years. I've got a feeling that may progress.
Well, you are tonight, Nikki.
Oh, my goodness, I know. I'm so excited. Do you know what? This is what how I used to feel when I used to stand in front of, like, doing theatre shows with 5,000 people. And I'm like, this isn't 5,000. This is a whole lot more, Nikki. So I'm like, just calm yourself. You're talking to George. He's fabulous. Calm down.
We've got 10 phone lines connected all over the planet, and they're all full with people wanting you to tell them a little bit about themselves already.
Okay.
So that's, we're going to do that next hour. We'll do that next hour. So what would have happened had I not stopped? I would have been hit on my side. It could have been very serious. I could have died. What would have happened, not to me physically, had I gone through that red light or green light? Well, what would have happened in the angelic realm if I didn't listen to them?
I think then that you would have broken your contract, I suppose, and then you would have gone up, or you could have even been, like, you know, paraplegic. You just don't know. And you could have gone up and said, wow, we've really mucked up on this one. We should have seen this a lot more before it happened and prevented this, because we really needed him to be here for the next 40, 50 years. You know what I mean? And so the angel realm hit. I imagine you would have got a rap on the wrist for not saving you. But to be honest with you, Neil, I did the show Angels for 2 seasons over here on Sky. I haven't heard of anybody that ignores an angel, because it is such an overwhelming feeling. It's such an overwhelming feeling that everybody stopped in their tracks. You know, there was a guy who was in Afghanistan, and he had the same thing where someone said, no, don't reach forward. And he just stopped, knowing that he was a sitting duck, a potential enemy. But then a mortar went straight through the van that he was going to be getting into the Jeep he was going to be getting into, he would have been dead outright. And it changed his life, you know, because he knew that if he'd moved that couple of feet forward, he would have died. And so there were so many stories about this. I get so many people email me to say, you know, this has happened to me. And some have even wanted to commit suicide.
Jeez.
And then an angel has turned up and said to them, no, you're not doing this. And then they go off somewhere for a day, come back, and they're new souls. And then they think, my God, what was that old feeling that I want to end my life? I feel amazing. And then they go on to do amazing things. You know, and so that I absolutely 100% know, one from, you know, skeptical people, ordinary people that tell me about how angels have changed their life. Perhaps there's another book in there for me. And I know it myself. And if it wasn't for them, I definitely would have taken myself over. You know, it wasn't for my two rescue dogs looking at me and supporting me. And that sounds really weird, but they stopped me as well, because all I could think of really was suicide at the time. I saw no future. I was told I had an incurable condition. I was never going to walk again. I was never going to get out of bed. Nothing was ever going to change.
That's amazing. Nikki, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take calls. We're going to chat a little bit more about your work, me, myself, and I, Diary of a Psychic.